obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
Hi, everybody. My name is Johnny, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm glad to be here today. I'm glad to be sober. I want to thank the committee and Shirelli in particular for giving me another opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope in Alcoholics Anonymous, and just have the privilege of being here. I came down to the roundup in 1967 as a young people's speaker. If you don't drink, you live a long time. It's getting kind of funny now, because for a long time I'd have young people come up to me, and they still do, and they say things like, "You know, you've been sober longer than I've been alive." Well, I looked at them, I said, "Yeah, that's good." But now you're getting even scarier, because they're saying things like, "You've been sober longer than my parents been alive." Well, I guess if you don't drink and you don't die, you can stay sober a while. I hope I never forget what a privilege it is to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. I lived for a year and a half in a penitentiary dreaming about someday you let me come and sit with you. I never thought you'd ever ask me to do anything, because I didn't think you'd let people like me associate with you inside of a room somewhere. Because I knew you were far, far, far superior to me. And the only thing I had going for me for that year and a half that I lived in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous in that penitentiary was I had a book called Alcoholics Anonymous. And it had me an opportunity to incorporate the program of recovery into my life that I could practice on a daily basis. And by the time I walked out of a penitentiary in June the 4th, 1961, I had a lot of things that a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous had, but there wasn't a completion in my life. I just had the basic fundamentals of Alcoholics Anonymous. I had taken an inventory, I had taken a fifth step, I had tried for a year and a half to clean up the wreckage of my past with letters to judges in different places. And when I got ready to walk out of the penitentiary, my dream was that maybe you'd let me come and sit with you. And it's been my great privilege for over 54 years to be allowed to come and sit, privileged in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and rub shoulders with people like you. Because Alcoholics Anonymous has given me everything I got. I wasn't raised by a family. I wasn't raised by a father. And I had a man who adopted me basically in Alcoholics Anonymous when I was new here. Every single thing in my life that's good and decent in my life is the byproduct of the God I discovered sitting with you. And I went to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous one night, carrying in there, and a man who had come to the penitentiary where I was at and talked, come up to me and told me he was going to be my sponsor. I had no concept about what sponsorship was, like a lot of people. I didn't have the slightest idea what being involved in a home group was, yet my group in the penitentiary was registered in New York, and it was the closest thing to an AA meeting that we could possibly have. We felt supporting through our own contributions. And it was really a nice deal, but those are the basic fundamentals of Alcoholics Anonymous. See, I had no avenue or direction on how to behave within this magnificent fellowship. I had no idea of holding my self-centeredness and my self-willingness down and my wanting to be something, because I didn't think what was going on. So I just said to Norm, his name was Norm Alpie, and I said to him, "Well, I don't even know what a sponsor is, Norm." He said, "Well, we're supposed to help you get things done that need to be done." And so I don't know where it came from, but I said to him, what do you want me to do? He said, why do you ask me? I said, you just told me you were going to be my sponsor. And he said a very profound thing to me that's kind of getting lost in the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. He said, Johnny, if I can't run my life, what the hell makes you think I can run yours? Then I'm really screwed now. He's going to help me. Now he don't want to. So I said, then what am I supposed to do? He said, well, why don't you just do what I do? And I didn't have a clue what he did. So I said, what do you do? He said, well, if you do what I do, then you'll know what I do. I have just broken up the great mystery of sponsorship. It's called monkey see, monkey do. But you have to be very careful in our fellowship today, because there's an awful lot of people running around here in monkey suits that ain't monkeys. They tell you things that have no relevance to where our business here is, what Alcoholics Anonymous is, anything. They have no concept about any of that kind of stuff. They tell you silly, stupid stuff like, don't drink no matter what. Do you know that alcoholics drink no matter what? I don't know how many of you ever waited till November to take a drink. I didn't. They tell you all kinds of stuff. Don't drink until your butt falls off. It goes on and on and on. But they never tell you how to keep that from happening. You see, and that's basically what a sponsor is all about. Strong sponsorship points the way and eases the burden, so you don't have to guess about what you're supposed to do. You just have to follow along in this little line. That's all. It was amazing to me. But then he started to give me instructions that I didn't like. No, like, get a job and go to work. You're a bum. I told him I wasn't a bum. He said, what are you? I said, I'm a member of AA. He said, no, you're a bum. Bums don't work. You're an AA bum. But he was right. I mean, I was, And I said, I'm not a bum, Norm. He said, what are you? I said, I'm a member of AA. And he said, Johnny, get a job and go to work. He said, get off of welfare. I almost hit him. I said, I've never been on welfare. Don't you ever say that to me ever again, Norm Alpy. I'm going to hurt you. And I probably would have, because I hadn't really got spiritual yet. And he said, what do you call living in a penitentiary? Self-supporting through your own contributions? My sponsor and my current sponsor have never been lost for little things. And the only reason I think it is so they can get me to stop and think and get out of myself for a moment. Because the main purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous that I have found, that prior to practice these principles in all my affairs a day at a time, and being a regular member of a home group and not wanting to run it, that really makes it nice. You just be a member of the group, be a member of Alcoholics Anonymous is all I ever wanted, all I ever dreamed about in that penitentiary was just being a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And it's just the most amazing thing that I know of. Just to go and sit down in my seat in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and listen to the small, quiet voice of God speak to me. And it comes from the alcoholics of my type who speak in AA meeting. That's the thing that I get sitting here. People are always talking about, when you get a real spiritual in Alcoholics Anonymous, some of these giants in AA talk to you about their long periods of meditation. If I try to shut my mind off for about 2 seconds, I go into some type of fantasy that I don't even want to know anything about. So it's necessary for a guy like me, or at least the way Bill Wilson wrote into our book, to distract my thought process, to get out of myself. My Papa Chuck used to talk a great deal about getting out of self. He used to talk about that's what it's all about. He says, relieve me from the bondage of self. That's what our book says. Our book says, relieve me from the bondage of self, so I may better do thy will. No better place in the world is that to do here, with the addition of a sponsorship into your life, than to go and find a place where you can go and be a regular servant in that group. You see, because the greatest thing that can happen to a guy like me, and I don't know about people like you, the greatest thing that I know about the people that I sponsor who come to my life are about being of service to Alcoholics Anonymous and the people about them. In our book, it says to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. Well, where are we maximum service? In Alcoholics Anonymous. Where else would we be maximum? You know, I mean, it's not that you can't practice these principles in all your affairs, but this great gift that was given to me a long time ago was given to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. So this is where I practice it. There's nothing wrong with anything else, not at all. But this is my home base. This is where I come. This is where my sponsor goes. I sit alongside of my sponsor every Wednesday night, and we sit there, and I sit with him for almost 32 years now on Wednesday night. And this is what he does. This is the type of example he sets for me. He never says bad talk. He always says good talk. And he must think I'm praying from time to time, because I say, Jesus Christ, where did this one come from, Clancy? He just gives me this. But it's amazing. So what is a home group? A home group for an alcoholic of my type has to be my basic base of operations. I have to be somewhere where I'm accountable. I have to be somewhere in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where the people I sponsor can find me when they want me. Not on any given day I might be somewhere else. I know where I'm at Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and so do the people I sponsor. So my sponsor knows where I'm at. Somebody calls, they know where I'm at. I'm not here one day and there somewhere and there somewhere and somewhere. I'm never running and hiding in Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm in some place where I can be of maximum service to God and the people about me. Does that make me a wonderful person? No. It just makes me a guy that knows that what I have in Alcoholics Anonymous is a daily reprieve from this deadly illness that's going to kill me if I let it get away from me. That no matter what's coming down the path, no matter what's going on, whether it's divorces, business failures, children on drugs, mother drinking herself to death, whatever it may be, I go and sit in my meeting. And when anything is possible bad with me, I step it up a little bit. It seems like God has a tremendous way in my life, this power of mine, this God thing, has a tremendous thing in my life to kind of, when it gets a little heavy sometimes, he just opens up the floodgates of things for me to do in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm not sitting around with a card, have talk, we'll travel. Just can't hardly wait to go to the next place. I'm one of those type of guys who'd be perfectly willing to sit Monday, Wednesdays, and Thursdays in my meeting and live a happy, normal life, whatever that is. That kills more alcoholics than anything that I know of. A happy, normal life. Anytime I ever forget about these great blessings that have been bestowed upon me in Alcoholics Anonymous, from this God that I discovered sitting with you, anytime I forget that these blessings have been bestowed on me, I'm close to a drink as I'm ever going to get. I can't get too busy. I have an awful lot of time with people, spend a lot of time with people who can't seem to stay sober. You just have a tough time with it. And I was sitting in a, I'm reading for the book study Pacific Group on Tuesday nights now all month, and I was sitting in there the other night, Tuesday night, and I was reading The Family Afterwards, which is real, topical for an alcoholic. But there's a lot of tough stuff there. And like our co-founder does so well in our book, he always gets it back to what it's really all about. He always, no matter what he flowers up and makes it out there, he always gets it back to my main purpose in life is to stay sober and to carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. It always gets back to this. And there's talking to this one guy. He was 20 years sober and he had 2 days sitting around a table with us after I got through reading the chapter. And there was another guy sitting around there, and they're giving me all these excuses on why they drank. And so I listened to him for a couple minutes, and then I told him what our program says about that. In our book, there's a guy who sold cars. He got drunk after being sober for a period of time. And there's another story about a man who was a businessman who put the plug in the jug and settled down to make a fortune and finally made it, and out come the carpet slippers and the whiskey. And he was dead in a few months. But Bill caps both stories off with this little innuendo that a lot of people seem to forget. Bill caps it off by saying they forgot to enlarge their spiritual life by constant work and effort with other alcoholics. My sponsors, I've only had two, are the greatest example of that I have possibly ever seen in Alcoholics Anonymous. My basic foundation in Alcoholics Anonymous were these three gentlemen, my papa, Norm, and Clancy. They are people in motion, in action, in Alcoholics Anonymous. It doesn't seem like it's too far or too inconvenient or anything else. And the great thing about it is, I sat in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous in a chair, in a place where I sit, where people know I am. And they come and they talk. And if you're involved in a home group, like I'm involved in a couple of home groups, my Wednesday night meeting is my second home. My Monday night meeting is my home group. And I usually see a lot of people in Alcoholics Anonymous who seemingly have put aside, for various reasons, I don't pin down the reason, but various reasons of why they do this. I hear them tell these colossal stories about what they did when they were new and what they got out of getting it when they were new and all this kind of stuff. But now, after a period of time, something else has seeped into the fold, and they have no time to do what they did when they were new. They have no time to take the actions to be where the people were who need the action. They have found other avenues of expression in some things. And it becomes a hideous example to watch that, because if you stay sober around here for any length of time and you're actively involved in Alcoholics Anonymous, you're going to see a lot of disasters from people who have become different than they were when they were new. I don't really pay much attention to that. What I pay attention to is the idea that if they no longer do it, why would they expect the people they sponsor to do it? Huh. My sponsor told me when I was a week or 2 weeks out of the penitentiary, he said, I want you to go to 3 meetings a week and listen. Don't say a word, just listen. I said, what if I'm talking? He says, that don't count because you're just listening to yourself. You see how tough they were in the old days? We were as sensitive then as the new people are today. We just don't have those type of problems then. But it's amazing. I still do that. I sit at Monday night meeting and I listen. I sit in a Wednesday night meeting alongside of my sponsor and I listen. I sit in my Thursday night meeting, which is a question and answer meeting, and I listen. I don't even ask questions. I just sit there. because that puts me to listen to the small, quiet voice of God as he talks to his children. You see, God talks to me through people. I'm not one of these people who hear the word as I'm riding down the street. I know God is always with me wherever I go and whatever I do, but my life is benefited by the people who talk to me about the things that are important to my life. This idea of constant work with other alcoholics or with other people, it doesn't make any difference where you go and what you do. Constant work with other alcoholics. The book says it. The book says it will save the day. When all else fails, constant work with other alcoholics will save the day. Well, if it'll save the day when all else fails, why shouldn't it be our main objective? Why shouldn't we carry this message into the darkest, dreariest places that we ever go? Why can't we bring it into our home group and sit down and be a member and be available to anybody who wants us to help them? Why can't we do that? Why can't we get up off our butts instead of being somebody come around and pay us homage? Why can't we get up off our butts and go out and start shaking hands with people, with newcomers? Our Monday night meeting is one of the greatest things that I know of, because we have a greeting line with 150 people in it. I mean, it's almost like running the gauntlet, you mean? And you know who's in there? Newcomers. That's where we put the newcomers. Get in there. Oh. But it is the greatest exposure to what we're all about here that you ever see. Because I go through that greeting line every week. I wait till it gets long, so I go through it. And by the time I get to the end of it, all kinds of things have happened to me. I've met people I haven't met before. They don't know who I am. They don't have any of these kind of ideas. You know, these people are trying to figure out, is this going to work here? And one of my favorite stories is when I was secretary of the group a couple years ago, I went to this line. I've always gone to this greeting line. But I go to this green line as I'm secretary and pick out my speakers. You know, you'd be surprised, people with 90 days, when you say, would you like to give a 10-minute talk? Could I read something? Oh, yeah. Can you read? That's the next question you have to ask them. And you say, yeah, okay, you know. And so my year was filled with a lot of hostilities from the old-timers who didn't get to participate because the newcomers were talking all the time. Too bad, because those newcomers are now starting to take birthday cake for 1 and 2 years, because we've involved them in there, not me. And one of my favorite stories about this little girl named Mary, I met Mary in the greeting line, and I went to see Mary, and the thing that attracted me about Mary, she had 7 or different colors of hair. I mean, it's almost like a glowing form, and she had piercing places wherever she could pace, and she wasn't dressed. She kind of dressed kind of suggestive, you know what I mean? My day, we used to call them trick suits. Now they standard operating procedure from what I've seen. And so I walked by her, and I said, hi, my name's Johnny. Well, sure, my name is Mary. Well, that was exciting to me because my mother's name was Mary. And that always gets my attention. And I said, well, God, Mary, how long have you been sober? And she said, oh, I got a couple of days in. And I said, well, that's fine, Mary. Welcome to our little group. And I went on down the line, didn't pay much attention to Mary. And next week I come by the line, and Mary's in line again.
To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.
And I said to Mary, I said, hey, Mary, you got a whole week now. She said, nope, 8 days. Don't ever short a newcomer a day. I mean, they will take you to task. I don't care if you've been sober 85 years. You're going to get it. I've been sober 8 days. I said, oh, I'm sorry, darling. Last week you told me a day. She said, a day and a week is 8 days, Johnny. I told her I got a little brain damage. I hope you'll excuse me. But anyhow, here's the story with Mary. And it's to me, it's what Alcoholics Anonymous is all about. If you don't see this, you've missed the whole ball game. You're here for the wrong reason, and you won't stay here, because if you haven't seen it in your life, you've missed what it's all about. It's not about not drinking so long that you're a fire hazard, for God's sake. It's not about gathering up 900 babies and pointing them out. No, it's not about any of that. It's not about talking at podiums all over the world. It's not about any of that. This is what it's really all about. I went through that line week after week, and there Mary stood. One day I went through that line, and Mary's hair was all the same color. Another time I went through this line, and Mary didn't have any jewelry in her face. And she was a pretty little girl. And I sit there, and one day I went through there, and Mary wasn't wearing her trick suit anymore. She had on a pair of pants or a skirt. Nobody was browbeating Mary and telling her to do that. Mary was just involved in a type of fellowship and confused places that people do things like that in our meeting, that they want to look like something has happened to them other than the fact they just come out of the ghetto somewhere. And the thing that really crowned the whole thing, the whole glory of the thing, I sat in our Monday night meeting and watched Mary get on a podium and get a one-year birthday cake. Had her hair fixed, her makeup was fixed, she had on a nice dress, and her sponsor gave her a cake. And being the type of tough guy I am, I had to turn my head away because I was afraid some of the guys who sit around me were going to see me choke back a tear. See, what that to me is, see, that's Alcoholics Anonymous. That's the availability of that to the newcomers when they come to Alcoholics Anonymous. To see that type of action from people around them, you do not have to browbeat them or nail them or do any kind of thing. All you have to do is set the example. They'll follow or they won't follow. There's not much you can do with that. And after the meeting was over, Mary's mother came up to me. And she said, Mary talks about you a lot. Said you were kind to her when she was new. And I said, thank you for that. She said, no, I thank you because, you see, I sleep at night when Mary's gone now. I know where Mary is. You see, that attributes to Alcoholics Anonymous. That's got nothing to do with Johnny Harris. That's what you taught me to do. You taught me to welcome everybody in Alcoholics, make a big deal out of somebody who's trying to stay sober. You know, and I talked to these guys on Tuesday night, I told them a story about what Bill said. You drink because you do not enhance your spiritual condition by constant work with other alcoholics. You cannot. If you ever have anybody you sponsor get drunk, the first thing they tell you is they quit going to meetings. Or where would we practice these principles? With ourselves, we look in the mirror and say, I'm practicing step two today. A lot of people do that, and they talk to themselves. We like to hear the voice of the intelligent, I guess. I don't know. Somebody calls them paranoid or something if it's too much. But that's the great thing in Alcoholics Anonymous. My sponsor, Norm, used to talk about the whole package. My sponsor today is going to talk about the secret of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no secret here. The secret is in getting the people to do it. How do you get them to do anything here? How do you do it? You set the example. You know, a week goes by in my home group on Monday night when somebody doesn't come up to me and say to me, you've been sober all these years and you started this meeting and you still have to put the chairs away? Yeah. Why do you do that? I said, because I sit in one. It's a little deep for some of these intellectual giants that's coming to Alcoholics Anonymous today. It's just a little too heavy for them. You see, I don't do that to impress anybody. I do that because that's what I was taught to do here. And so far, it's worked very well for a long time. I watch a lot of other people get ideas. That's fine and dandy with me. I can't afford it. My life, every single day of my life, is death marches on. See, when I was a kid in juvenile hall, 11 years old, 1941, I was indoctrinated into a street gang. And I lived from 1941 to 1960 involved in that kind of a lifestyle. And every day in that lifestyle was a matter of life and death. I either adhered to certain conditions or I would die a horrible, agonizing death. Maybe not at anything else, but maybe at the hands of the people that I was supposed to have friends. That's what alcoholism is to me. Alcoholism is not a fairly clinical disease. Our book calls it a spiritual illness, a voidness in my soul that needs to be filled with something. So why would Bill say that if I don't enhance my spiritual condition without constant work with other alcoholics, how am I going to expect to stay sober if I'm an alcoholic? It's nowhere in the God world. Those things mean something to me. It's not that I get up every day and think, I run into people accidentally to help them. You know, my wife and I were in San Francisco one day, and we were out walking somewhere, going shopping or doing something. I don't know what. We was up there for something. I don't know, some type of a group anniversary. I don't know what it was. And we got down there, and there was a guy laying in the doorway. And, you know, I'm a big-time speaker. I took a look at him. Not my wife. My wife got down on her hands and knees with this guy and put his head in her lap. And I felt embarrassed, so I got down on my knees. Kind of a different view from things when you're on your knees, no matter what puts you down there. And we held this guy long enough for the fire department to get there. And he knew this guy by name. They picked him up so many times, they knew him by name. Now, I don't know what happened to this guy. You know, I haven't got the slightest idea what happens to people who leave our fellowship. I don't inquire about them. I'm not really interested in what's going on. My life is so busy, I don't have a chance to be worried about people who don't want our fellowship or don't want part of our program recovery. If you're not interested in trying to help people, don't come around talking to me. I really don't have time to enter into your conversations about where you're going to do yoga, where you're going to have lunch next week, or what meetings or movies you've seen. You know, I'm interested in saving my own life through these principles and being such an example that I could pass it on to other people. I'm not trying to be the most perfect examples of alcohol, but I had great people who've gone before me. You know, Norm Mauppi was a whirlwind in action. I mean, he talked so fast, he gave a two-hour talk in 45 minutes. I remember one night I was with him, I'd gone to a meeting. Man, I'd get in a car with him, and he'd just start talking to me after he'd left me on the street corner three or four times because I didn't look proper for him or didn't say the right thing. And I was coming out of that meeting, and he had me so fired up, I said to him, "I'm going to join AA." He looked at me with that disgusting look the sponsors will give you from time to time and said, "Jackass, you're already in it." Oh. You see, that's the type of balance I want here when I come to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. When I sit in a meeting, I listen to the small, quiet voice of God in Alcoholics Anonymous talk through his children, conveying this message of recovery to his children, no matter where it is or what they're doing. That's what I want to hear in alcohol. I want to walk out of an AA meeting acting like something has happened to me. Can't wait till I get to the coffee bar. I want to get this feeling. I want to watch Mary get their birthday cake. I want to choke back that tear. And you know why? Because it brings back the glorious happenings that has happened to me in alcoholics. I recognize that because it happened to me. That's all. I didn't recognize it because I read it in a book or I heard it on a tape or somebody told me about it from a podium. I recognize it because that's exactly what happened to me. My sponsor made sure that I didn't stand out like a sore thumb in Alcoholics Anonymous, either big shot or low shot. You know, my Papa Chuck was good at that. Very good at it. These people that have been before me have been very good about keeping me in my place. Because I have a tendency, all people do, have a tendency to outgrow my usefulness in Alcoholics Anonymous. And I remember I was talking, just a long time ago, I was talking at the Sunday morning meeting and at the Southern California Convention. It was in the Anaheim Convention Center. And the guy leading the meeting was a guy that I spent some time with in juvenile hall and different institutions. Also, his name was Lonnie Redd. And I'm the Sunday morning closing speaker and sitting down there at a table with my sponsor and my papa and my family and a whole sitting around there. And I gave this talk. And as they tend to do, the multitude started to come across the stage after I got through talking. And I'm sitting there waiting for them to get through, and you know, little gray-haired ladies, you know, I'm, about every kiss I got a little bigger and a little braver, and my head got a little bigger and a little smarter, and I got a little more spiritual, I guess, I don't know. But and over in the corner stood my papa. I never, if I get to be 100 years old, I'll never forget the story. When it was all done, I didn't wait for him to come to me. I went to him. And I went over there. I remember he putting his arm around me like he always did and kissed me on the cheek like he always did. And this is what he said to me. Son, if you ever get to believe in that crap, you're dead. Anybody who's ever ridden that high side of life knows exactly what I'm talking about. Sometimes we become so spiritually intoxicated with ourselves, we're of no earthly use to anybody. And nobody was a better illustration of that than my sponsor, Norm. I remember one time I'm down in Texas talking at a convention. I'm starting to be a one of them. And I remember Friday night, when our dear old friend Harold Wilson was talking on Friday night, great amen. And on Sunday, on Saturday afternoon, there was a woman named Ramona, who was probably one of the greatest Al-Anons that I've ever known, outside of my mom. And Saturday night, Joe Lee talked. Why no Joe? And I'm Sunday morning, so I'm having breakfast, and I committed the cardinal sin of the alcoholic. Everything that needs to be said in Alcoholics Anonymous has already been said. What am I going to say? So I said to myself, I think I'll take them to the steps. Oh, it's a bad idea. I was about the beginning of the second step, and I'm stuck, and I know I'm stuck, and I'm talking, and I'm embarrassed, and I know I'm embarrassed and around all these people that I loved a great deal, and I just couldn't wait to get out of there and get on my plane and go home, and I walked in the door, and the phone rang. And I picked up the phone, and it was Norm. Johnny? I said, yeah, Norm. He said, where you been? I said, well, I've been down in Texas giving a talk. He says, that's not what I heard. He says, I heard you were out there trying to explain our program of recovery and the steps of these people. Oh. He said, let me give you a little information, hotshot. If you can't tell them what you were like and what happened to you and what you're trying to be like today, don't go. I have never forgot those two statements from my papa and my sponsor, Norm. Ever have I ever forgot about it. And the moment that I do, when I have those moments when I think that God has bestowed blessings on me that he's not going to bestow anybody else, those two incidences in my life bring me right back to ground. Right where I belong, just a member of Alcoholics Anonymous, not anything special in God's eyes. I sit around, I was on a plane not very long ago, and I'm coming home, and I'm looking out the window, and this plane accidentally flew over San Quentin to land in San Francisco. And I look down there, and I'm trying to say, man, it's a long way up here from down there. And so I'm starting to think, which is not one of my strong suits. And I'm trying to figure out why me. My first meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, there were four or five people from the outside. There were 45 convicts in there with me. I wasn't even an alcoholic. And I'm the only one out of that group that stayed sober. And I don't know why this is, so I'm questioning, why is this? Why me? See, there's a thin line there between arrogance and something else. I don't know what it is. Why me? Why was I given this gift? Why was this? You know, I wasn't given this gift to have a house or an education or a family or a wife or friends or travel all over the world. I wasn't given a gift that. Not at all. It dawned on me before the plane landed that the only reason God has bestowed this gift upon me through the Fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is so I can carry the message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And if I ever forget that, that my main purpose in life and in Alcoholics Anonymous is to try to stay sober and carry the message to the alcoholic or anybody else that wants that is having problems. I don't really care. I don't divide things up. Wherever you can get help, get it. You know, it's not the only voice in the world, but there's 1,000 voices all over this country who will take you by the hand and try to lead you into the lap of God and the happy enjoyment beyond your wildest imagination. I have lived a magnificent life in Alcoholics Anonymous. I've had its ups, I've had its downs. The only thing that's ever bothered my ups and downs in Alcoholics Anonymous is my selfishness and my self-centeredness. When I get some kind of an idea that I can should have this, I forget to run it by my sponsor, that I should just go do this and then tell him. See, you have to have a sponsor that you love before that happens. You have to have a sponsor, not that you idolize. I love my sponsor. You know, I love what he does. You know, I can say what I want to say. Don't you say anything about it to me at all. And I'm concerned for him because I lost one. I don't ever want to lose another one. I never want to be in that never, never land where I don't have somebody to look up to smile and to sit with and put up with my nonsense and me put up with their nonsense. I don't ever want to be around anybody with that void in my life like I did with Norm, that year that I went without him, trying to figure out what was going on and all these other things. And the day I walked into Clancy's office, I didn't go there to have him sponsor me. I went down there to tell him that I was concerned about what was going on at the powwow. Then it was a roundup. I had to wake the chairman up 3 or 4 times from some type of a stupor to start the banquet. And the second time I did that, I decided I didn't want any more of this thing. So I wrote a letter of resignation to the chairman of the roundup. Then I thought, I better think about this. I don't have Norm. I can't talk to Pop about it. And so I went down to see Clancy. And like he does, he'll take all comers. If you're willing to go down there, he'll listen to you. And so he said, I told him this great story. You know, I couldn't stand this anymore. And he was aware of it, so it was nothing new to him. And he said, well, maybe you're going to have to get rid of it, Johnny, get out of it. I said, what do I need a sponsor for? I have already written this answer and mailed this resignation. What do I need? I don't know. I know none of you have ever been that high on yourself, but I am. And I started to walk out of his office. I remember every time I see him, I think about this. There was a crummy little office in that old mission. And I turned at the door, and I had a chill run down my spine. And I looked at him, and I said, Clancy, I need a sponsor. I thought he was going to say to me, what an order. I can't go through with it. You're too much for me, dude. So I said to him, he says, okay, let's give it a whirl. I said, what do you want me to do? He said, why don't we go to the Wednesday night meeting and have you call me every day? That's okay. 32 years have come and passed. I still go to the Wednesday night meeting. To call him about every day. The guy asked me one time in Louisiana, why do you call him every day? And I said, he hasn't told me not to yet. See, it's basically that simple with me. Basically that simple. That is my lifeline to Alcoholics Anonymous. I can't get too far off base or too far away from him for him not to pull the reins in on me. I can't do that. I can't go to that meeting and sit there uncomfortable. I can't be around him with this feeling of uncomfort and secrets and all this other kind of stuff, because I can't do that. I know there's something wrong with me when I do that. I'd like to go sit in that Wednesday night meeting and sit there and talk to him and laugh at him and carry on with him like we do on Wednesday nights there, because there is nothing between me and my sponsor he doesn't know. What a great thing. If you don't have something like that, you don't have a relationship like that, you miss most of it. You know, the steps are great. They will put you in a condition. They will clean up the wreckage of your past. They'll make it easier for you to walk freely in the world. And me, they've given me complete freedom from everything. Full pardon and the whole business. But a sponsor is a lifeline. The sponsor is the person in my life who is usually ahead of me and who I love and adore for the work that he does. Not that he's perfect by any wild stretch of the imagination. There ain't no perfect people in this room. I know that. I know most of you. I can say that without the benefit of a doubt. He only made one perfect person in the history of the world, and he hung him on a piece of wood because he frightened people. The great thing about my sponsor is I know his humanness, and I love him for it just the same. And when my Papa Chuck died, the last year that he lived, and I sit there with him on that porch and I watch them hummingbirds sing, telling me them little rascals they're not supposed to fly. And the aeronautical engineers say they can't fly. The hummingbird doesn't know that. I've had a great love, and I've had great admiration for these people who've gone before me. If I could wish you anything this weekend, anything at all, I wish you have people in your life like that. I wish you have people in your life like that who are no holds barred, will walk down the middle of the road, and they will try to lead you to the promised land. This is a more wonderful thing that a guy like me, a selfish, self-centered, egotistical guy, will turn my will and my life over to the care of God in the human form of, I'll make my homage and listen to my sponsor. My life is good, and I hope yours is too, and I thank you very much for listening to me.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the month club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com. We'll be right back.